This episode of the Off Course Podcast is sponsored by UST Mamiya. Their graphite shaft offerings are represented by the word quality, performance, and feel, which I believe is an excellent way to describe their lineup. Whether you are familiar with their early staples like the Pro Force and Gold Series, their recoil iron shafts, or you're like me and currently exploring their Link offering, they're bound to have an option that suits your game and style. Visit www.ustmamiya.com to learn more.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. With me this week is Mr. Rod Dunlap from Caddy Daddy. He is the co-owner over there and quite the character on the THP forum, if you can catch him posting. How are you, Rod?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a thrill to have you on. Caddy Daddy's been talked about quite a lot. You guys have a glove that's making waves in here. But I want to go back to introduce people to your product who maybe aren't on the forum or not specifically talking about it, to get an understanding of where Caddy Daddy came from. I did a little bit of research, not a crazy amount. And it's my understanding you guys actually started as a, what would you call it, beer cooler company. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, the way it started is I was selling software with a buddy of mine. We were selling medical software, and actually it was three of us. And I was just starting to pick up the game a little bit and playing more. And in those days, we couldn't find anything in retail that would keep our beer cold. And so it was, we just felt like there was a need for it. Obviously, some courses don't enjoy us bringing beers, but that's where we were at. But basically it went from there, and I came to work and I said, hey guys, I got an idea. You know, there's no coolers out there. We went and checked all the retail stores around us back in those days, mom and pops and stuff. And if there was something, it was just poorly made, wouldn't work. And I said, let's build a golf bag that's got a cooler in it, because this is 2002 and no bags had coolers in them back then. And, so starting to talk about it, one of my buddies jumped on it. The other buddy said, you guys are crazy, I'm not doing this. And basically what happened is he said, you know, that's going to cost a lot of money, and we're not, you know, we're coming into this with very little financial backing. How about we design a cooler that'll fit in any golf bag? And that's kind of how it started. And I always been a big dreamer, and I figured this $20 cooler was going to make us millionaires overnight. And so I invested heavily into it, you know, time and otherwise. And then come to find out after a few years, we were like, well, this one product's not gonna do it if we want to do this seriously. And then we just started branching off and looking at travel bags and some other things.
Yeah, so I can tell that you guys don't take yourselves too seriously, in a sense that I'm looking at the protector arm, which you normally just call a protector arm. You guys call it the North Pole, which I thought was absolutely hilarious enough to buy it. You know, that is that naming conventions like that, is it a combination of functionality and just genuinely not taking yourselves too seriously? Is that kind of the identity that Caddy Daddy has?
Yeah, you know, we're not your typical golf company, that's for sure. You know, we're not scratch golfers. I didn't grow up playing this game. My business partner started early. I didn't start until I was in my late 20s. And so, you know, we're not the typical branding marketing company. So we're learning as we go. But yeah, we definitely don't take ourselves too serious. One thing we always take serious is kind of how our products perform and our service behind them. And that's kind of where we're at. We don't, when it comes to names, when it comes to, you know, packaging, we're kind of more in your face, and I get it. Some guys, especially with our logo, I think I just read again today, somebody didn't like our logo. And I'm like, that's cool, I get it. And it might be a turnoff for some people, but we have made quite a few changes to it. We've toned it down, and that was all based on THP giving us some really cool feedback. But we are who we are, and we're just not a typical golf company that's suit and tie. And if you see us at the PGA show years ago, we weren't those guys. We don't, you know, we're not sitting down with a notebook. We're not giving you a pitch across all our products. We design things we want and that we like, that we think are missing in the industry, and hopefully consumers like it. And that's kind of how we run it.
Yeah, I mean, you get a sense of the expectations you should have for Caddy Daddy as soon as you click on your travel covers section of your website. I mean, you go from sort of safety to what looks to be wrapped in first class magic with some of your like the hard top. You've got a premium one. I have a bunch of questions about this part of the industry because I would assume it's been a really awkward couple of years with what has gone on in our country. I don't think too many folks are traveling. Has it gone nuts in the last, let's say, 6 months to a year? Is that pretty fair to say, or do you see a ramping up of people traveling again?
Oh, for sure. When COVID hit, I'll share a couple things with you. When COVID hit, we had our first month when it really started going, it went south pretty quickly, but our revenue went, when everything just stopped, our revenue, we were running at 5% the first month when things got really nasty out of our normal revenue. The next 2 months, I think we ran at 10%. So anybody, any luggage company, any company out there that especially golf travel, you know, like Shipsticks, I can't even imagine how they survived. But now we're at the other end of the spectrum for sure. And I mean, it's really, you know, obviously people in the U.S. are done with COVID and they want to be done, and I'm right there with them. So thankfully it's really helped our business, but, and we have gotten some of our bags back into some retail partners that we used to do business with, like Worldwide Golf, which is Budget Golf, and some retailers, and PGA Tour Superstores carrying a few bags. So it's helped us. But the surviving component was a big part of it. And thankfully we came out on the other side.
Yeah. So you also sell quite a bit on Amazon, right? As a company, you've embraced that Amazon storefront style of business. What is that like? I mean, you obviously hear a lot of direct to consumer stuff. You hear a lot of that in-store kind of product sales, but I don't think I've really ever had a conversation with a group who's excited and willing and eagerly sharing their Amazon experiences. Has it been a very big positive for you guys?
Oh, for sure. Because when Amazon, when we found an option to start doing business with Amazon, we were kind of, when that kind of came to fruition, we lost a lot of mom and pops retailers. We lost, Golfsmith was gone in those days. So we used to do business, quite a bit of business with Golfsmith. So for us, it just led to another opportunity to get our products out there. And in a way that we could sell a fair amount of volume in one spot. Dealing with the ins and outs of Amazon is a very lengthy process. Thankfully, my business partner handles most of that stuff, so I don't get involved a lot. But to be honest with you, if you can manage the pricing without affecting your retail relationships, and we run everything on MAP, minimum advertised price. And so for us, we can keep those margins where they need to be so everybody can make money. And that's a big part of it when you're dealing with different partners. Amazon's been really great for us. There are some things that haven't been so great. But for the most part, yeah, it's been a real positive for us. And we started really early. So the way that helped us is that we had rankings and ratings really early on. So a lot of our competitors might have, 100 reviews on one of their bags. We've got a couple thousand on our constrictor, I think. So doing it early, and it's kind of changed the way we run our business, too. We don't make too many changes with some of our products that have been longstanding on Amazon, because then you're back to square one with reviews. So it's a big component of what we do, but it's also it's helped us to obviously with sales, but also people understanding who we are and learning more about the brand. So it's definitely overall a real big positive for us.
That's great. You mentioned Constrictor. Is it ignoring the Sunday bag cover, which seems to be just more of a topper? Would you say your bags are grouped in two sections, the Constrictor and the CDX 10 being a collective, and then the Phoenix to the first class and in another class of itself? Or do you look at them all in succession?
Yeah, they're kind of in succession. We actually are in the process of discontinuing the CDX 10s. Our Constrictor is going to be our kind of entry level bag. One of the reasons we did that is back to Amazon, is there's companies out there that will knock you off or produce something very similar at no margin whatsoever. And we basically made a decision, we're going to make our bags better, and we're going to be in that medium to higher price point and quit trying to fight with guys that want to make $2 a bag, because it makes no sense for anybody. And so for us, we're really concentrating more on the quality side. And I think still to this day, even with our constrictor being our entry level, that's a heck of a nice bag that will compare really favorably to most bags from other manufacturers in the 130 to 150 range.
Yeah. I mean, just over $100 is not a scary number when you think about the prices you're paying to travel to begin with. So,
right.
You know, something to protect your thousands of dollars with a golf club shouldn't be a huge deal.
Right.
But I'm also curious, because the pricing on your other three bags that I'm looking at right now, it's so reasonable by comparison. What would you suggest if someone's looking at a Caddy Daddy right now? What's the one that you would say you should buy more than any of the others if you want to protect your products?
Well, I mean, as far as soft cases are concerned, our first class bag, that thing's a beast. The materials alone on that cost us twice what the constrictor cost. Ballistic nylon is expensive. The padding we put on top is basically double what's in the constrictor. We've got military grade hardware all the way around, the wheels, everything. That bag, again, if I compare that to most manufacturers, that's probably $250 to $300 from somebody else. So as far as if you're looking for a soft case and you don't mind spending a few bucks, that bag's the best bag we make. And I think the best bag for the money, for sure.
Yeah, you said ballistic nylon, and I can certainly see you watch some all respect to those working in the airline industry, but you see some of those bags get tossed around, you're like, man, I hope that thing's built well.
You know, it's the craziest thing in the world. People still, and you know, we're that's why we came up with our warranty. So on all our bags, we do a 1-year warranty. Okay. Where it's no questions asked. You send us a picture, you send us a copy of the order, you send us your shipping address. If they punch a hole in one of our bags, we ship you a brand new bag. We ask you to give the used one to a charity if it's still, you know, usable. And we make it super simple. We don't get bags back. We don't deal with any of that stuff. And our first class has a 2-year warranty, that same warranty. Because we do that because we know what the airlines are capable of. And it's gotten better, it's gotten worse, not better over the years.
Yeah.
And you know, especially being a soft case manufacturer, we used to make a hard case that was an all inclusive, kind of a play out of bag, called the Copilot that we discontinued a few years ago. But the soft cases, I mean, that first class is by far the materials and stuff will hold up better than most any other bags that I've seen or that we produced or other bags that are out there. But it never say never. They can still, I've seen bags literally where I think the only way they could do the damage on one of our bags is to take a box knife and slit it down the front. And we replaced it, and it just is what it is. It's the nature of the beast in this business, but it's amazing what these guys can do sometimes. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, they go out of their way to damage the bag. Let me just say.
Yeah. Well, you make, they're obviously the majority of bags now have wheels on them, and you'd anticipate that if you're going to move them, you'd think they'd move them with the wheel side. But I've seen plenty of conditions where, you know, the other side of the bag gets drug along the ground. And I've had a couple where you can see that frayed corner. When it comes to testing and seeking ways to improve it, what is that process like for you guys? Is it different than something else?
Yeah, so we've been really fortunate over the years, and I think a lot of this came to, you know, we saw where other companies were struggling with inventory, shipping, things like that. We've been really fortunate because we've been doing it for quite a while. We use the same suppliers we've been using for 12 to 15 years. So for us, not only do they hold stock for us so we can get through things when there's a slowdown, or in case of COVID now, when things speed up, that's a big part of our business. So having a supplier you've dealt with for so long where their quality is pretty amazing, that's a big part of the deal. I mean, from the early days, I can tell you some horror stories from getting product that was less than acceptable. I remember we riveted bags in my garage when we started out because they were missing rivets to make them where they were even sellable as an open box again. I mean, we are the epitome of a family business that started out of a garage. That's where we began. So for us, it's all about, I've learned over the years that the biggest part of who we are and what we've become is to have really good manufacturing in place that we trust. And so when we come up with an idea, we do a lot of testing in the gloves, especially. But with the travel bags, we don't have to do a lot. We know that they're monitoring our quality of fabrics, materials. They catch everything before it gets in-house. So that's a big benefit of being with the same suppliers for a number of years.
A couple of years ago, I was introduced to the UST Mamiya Link shaft and the gunmetal finish, and the performance was pretty awesome. Their Q comes from their Q fiber technology, which they've actually carried over into their new offering, the Link M40X. I could talk all about fiber strength and tensile modulus to represent what M40X is, but in terms we can actually understand, it's about taking away that boardy feel and delivering increased energy into the golf ball. UST Mamiya brings Link M40X to the table with three launch and finish offerings: black for low launch, blue for mid launch, and red for mid high launch. For more information on the Link shaft and all their graphite offerings, visit www.ustmamiya.com. What has the last couple of years looked like for that? And especially the last year or so, is it getting harder to get material like everywhere else in the industry? You certainly don't need to go into depth there, but I'm assuming the strain is everywhere.
Costs are a huge component. There's slowdowns. We import, obviously. When we started out, we tried to make stuff in the U.S. and the cost we got just for sampling and the number of units to start was definitely out of reach for our business. But that being said, there's always struggles. It doesn't matter how long you've been doing this. But material costs have definitely gone up. There's less of them. They take longer to produce. And so you just have to plan accordingly. So it used to be that we could, ship a container and get it here in 15 days. Well, that pushed to 45. And then you don't know if you're getting it, if there's going to be additional costs. I mean, a lot of that people don't understand is when this first hit, we were paying $4,000 for a container from China to get to LA. And we at peak, it was $20,000. And so you have to roll with that immediately and figure out how you're going to adjust your cost to stay profitable. And thankfully, it hit industry wide, so nobody could get past it, right? So the retailers didn't push back. They knew. So in 1 year, we had to raise our price, I think, three times. And so it's just, to me, there's always something. And so you just have to prepare yourself. I mean, COVID was obviously unforeseen, and that's the worst, hopefully the worst we'll see. But, the luxury of being a small business is we can roll with it pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's been really fascinating to watch from just a consumer's perspective. Obviously, as an end user, I don't see the struggles from getting from point A to point B. In golf, it seems like the materials you would normally expect to be in surplus of, like shafts and grips, and the simple things of clubs just aren't as easy to come by. And it's curious to hear that it obviously coming from somewhere else, you get impacted as well. But what's that like when you project outward from what your current status is? Because you were obviously making moves. You're adding different items to the Caddy Daddy lineup. You don't seem to be afraid to try new things. Has it brought you a little bit in by comparison in the last couple of years from a trial and error kind of thing? Or are you still looking very much like you feel like expanding?
We're always looking to expand. If we see a need, or if we, find something that's exciting to, customers. The glove, obviously, when COVID hit, that we were just introducing that. So I had a lot of time on my hands, and that just became our focus. And thankfully, a lot of customers, THP was instrumental in helping us make quick adjustments to those. The feedback's been pretty phenomenal. So that gets you excited again. I don't take anything for granted when it comes to this business. You just never know what's on the horizon. I feel thankful that we're able to do what we do and enjoy doing what we do. But every day, I'm one of those guys that I don't ever, especially after COVID, especially after tariffs, you name it. There's no day where I feel very comfortable in my shoes that we're just killing it. And there's not something, there's not going to be an obstacle in our way. I'm always looking. I'm always nervous that somebody's going to take market share from us. So that kind of inspires me to keep my work ethic going and don't get complacent.
Well, let's talk gloves. Obviously, it's been a big deal for you guys over the last year or so. The Claw. I mean, that it's a name that obviously has an impact as soon as you see it. But that's not enough. You guys obviously are doing it differently. You have a unique style, a gripping mechanism on the palm. You're definitely not looking at, let's just find some Cabretta leather and make a golf club with our logo on it. You guys went way past that and are looking at things in your own way. What made you want to do it so differently than others?
Well, we started we actually launched a different glove. I don't know how long it's been now, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, called the Talon. And that was, instead of the, how we do the stripes on the palm with the claw, that was a full silicone palm. And after a while, we weren't really happy with the quality and just didn't feel like it was the grip and the comfort that we were looking for. So we basically just said enough is enough. And we wrote off a lot of product. That was a spendy loss for us. But we just never gave up on it. Playing in Arizona, gloves here just get so, leather gloves or even the synthetics. The synthetics I've ever worn have just been so uncomfortable that it just never worked for me. But if you buy a nice leather glove, let's say $20, $25, whatever, that's the thin leather, they're great for a couple rounds. But if you throw that thing in your bag, especially we play in the summer here a lot, that third or fourth round, that thing is dry, nasty. And I'm not a guy who throws things in Ziploc bags or any of that stuff. Or the humidors, which I read about. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So I just thought that we could find materials that were better than leather, especially for our conditions. I didn't know what other people thought. I was really concerned in those days. But we just kept messing around. And so we finally found a supplier that we still are able to use, one of our main suppliers who still run QC for us. They handle everything on that side. So for us, it was just a matter of finding the right materials, making sure that they were going to last a fair amount of time, which they've actually lasted longer than I envisioned. And then whatever else we kind of just, jumped on along the way. I didn't know if they'd be machine washable. That just happened to be, let's test it, see if it works. So I threw them in the washing machine and they work. And I'm like, okay, well, this is cool. Well, this will be another benefit. And so we're always looking to improve. Our next version of the Pro and our original gloves will both have dual mesh on the index finger and the thumb, which will make them last even longer. I finally just ordered a new glove called the Claw Max, which we tried to launch a while back, and we pulled it because bad manufacturing and the design wasn't what we expected. Finally got the right material on that. That glove might last longer than our current gloves. So I'm thinking we'll have those ready in May or something. So we're always looking to improve products. We're always looking to add new products, extend our reach. Adding new, we're doing a lot of marketing. We just started running some Golf Channel ads down in Miami to see how those go. So we're always looking to, add new retail, add new customers, and not afraid to make mistakes along the way. And that's just kind of how we run our business. And thankfully it's been successful so far.
Yeah. I love that you're just absolutely flexing with different material. I mean, flex mesh, suede, got all these different styles. You mentioned a silicone. Like that's so far out of, let's be clear. I've seen one or two with something similar on the upper, especially for women's golf. I think my wife had a number of them. that were very breathable on the top. But from a men's golf perspective, at least what I've been playing, you don't see that kind of material. You don't see that that the chances being taken there from a company that is taking itself very seriously in terms of performance. And, you know, obviously, I have a couple questions that relate to how adaptable people are to it, because it is a step away. You get a lot of people would say, can you kind of close the gap between what I'm used to and what this product offers?
Well, so that's probably the max that will be coming out. That'll have the closest feel to a tight fitting leather glove. Now, okay. It's not, you know, the guys that don't like our gloves, those typically are the guys that like thin leather, whether it's the feel, whether it's the smell, whether it's the, and they, you know, they don't rip the through smell. Them. It is. No, I'm serious. Some guys, they open a new one and they love it. And I get it.
That's
our audience. That they may play in conditions where they don't sweat through gloves. They don't tear gloves. I don't know. Me personally, I can't a decent, nice leather glove. I can burn through in, you know, 5 rounds. And that's probably part of my, you know, my terrible game and my horrific grip and who knows what else. But for me, especially, and we were talking earlier, you know, we play and it's 110 here in Arizona in the summer, play a lot of golf. And so when I get done with a round, you know, because I'm trying to drink as much water as I can and get my AC in my car and get out of there, you know, I'm just throwing as much as I can in my bag. My old leather glove just goes in a pocket, in a ball pocket.
Yeah.
And so it lasts me a couple rounds. And then the third round, it feels terrible. And yeah. So, you know, we just started messing around years ago we're big football fans, NFL fans, and we just started looking at some of the receiver gloves that were out there. And that's how we kind of started with the materials and looking to see what options, because obviously there's suppliers out there making football and some baseball gloves that have some of these materials that I thought would be reasonable for golf. One of the biggest hurdles we had with the claw was with the stripes that we have on the palm is that there was a lot of back and forth with the USGA and finally got approval. People don't realize, a lot of people, that you have to get approval for a glove if you want to be able to play within a tournament. The USGA says that you have to have a flat palm with no raised ridges. So there was a lot of tinkering that went on to allow them to approve our glove. And now it's approved in all the styles.
You know, it's so funny because as I'm looking through the product information, and obviously as a consumer, I want as much info there as possible. You actually have conforms with the rule of golf listed. Like, it's a golf glove, man. Like, how, what? It's not like it's too long. You know, it's not like a driver. It's not like it's 47 inches long, but you've got it listed. Like, that's crazy that something like this. I mean, obviously the intent of a golf club is to keep hold of a golf, or a golf glove is keep hold of a golf club. How having ridges on there would be non-conforming is kind of baffling to me.
Yeah, I will. And that was one where we just kind of stepped into it. And when I started looking, we found out that there was different. How would I say it? There that, you know, that this was had to be a flat surface. I didn't realize that. And so it ended up, I found a competitor's glove that had something similar. It's a little different. I won't mention any names, but they were saying that it was conforming. And basically what happened was there was a lot of back and forth with the USGA. And luckily they were great, you know, as far as conversing and say, this is probably what you need to do. I can't tell you for sure. And so there was a lot of that going back and forth. But I knew from our experience with the Talon glove that we used to get questions all the time. Is this conforming? I'm like, it's a golf club, man. And then come to find out it does. So when we invented or you know, designed the first claw glove, that was the first thing before I was going to take it to market, because I knew we were going to get those questions, was get it conforming first and then we'll launch it.
So you have two gloves that are at least represented on the website. Obviously, you mentioned another one coming, but the Claw and the Claw Pro, what if someone's looking to buy a product, would you recommend one over the other? Is there just personal preference there? Because obviously there's additional elements that go into the Pro, like the suede features more on the higher end in the back of the wrist or near the upper, I guess you'd say. Is that one of the biggest feature differences?
Or yeah, so I mean, the Pro was basically designed based on my time on the Hacker's Paradise, you know, talking to customers who tried the original. And one of the biggest things with the original for some guys, typically better players with higher swing speeds, is they didn't like the movement on the mesh on the top of the hand. And so when we decided we were going to make some changes, you know, I ran some of those by some of the guys and said, okay, if we do this and we do this, what do you think? And I just can't, you know, the value in that is pretty amazing to be able to get real time feedback. So that's why I'm on THP all the time. But anyways, it allowed us to jump into that. But basically the main, I got off track, but basically the main difference is the Pro is designed to have a tighter fit similar to a leather glove. It doesn't have near the movement because we don't have the mesh across the full top of the hand. So I would recommend that for a guy that likes a tight fitting leather glove. If you're in South Florida, Arizona in the summer, and all you care about is, how much your hand breathes and how much you sweat, then the original is going to be the best bet. And for me, I can go back and forth with either. I'm good with either. The difference is the original, you typically have to size down because it stretches so much with the top of the hand. But okay. Yeah, that everything that we do is based on feedback we get from customers. Or if we just go to retail and say, why isn't this made? We'll try something. That's typically how we come up with new products.
Do you get a lot of feedback on the pointer finger of the glove? I mean, obviously that's a big friction point on depending on how you grip. I personally Varden, which means, you know, it's my one finger's right over top of that. Talking about durability and expectations there, do you get a lot of feedback on that part? Was there big decisions to make the whole set of fingers this material that you've committed to with the mesh?
Well, originally we decided to start with gloves that we would use. And so the mesh component was just something to make it as breathable as possible, just with the conditions we play here. And then it kind of, we went to a better mesh. We originally used the polyester. Now we're using a nylon mesh, which makes it stronger. And then from there, we still had, and it's not very often, but probably, you know, we probably hear a handful of people that, and oh, it's so funny. So some guy sent me an email probably 2 weeks ago and sends me a picture of his glove that he said he only got 6 rounds out of on I think it was one of our originals, and literally sends me a picture of his thumbnail that's in the picture and was probably a good quarter inch of past where his thumb is. and I literally said, hey, we're happy to, you know, because he frayed the end of the thumb and he ripped through it on the mesh. And I said, happy to replace, send him a new one. I said, but you really want to consider, you know, trimming your thumbnail, or this is going to happen again. So, you know, it, most people with, you know, that have their fingernails, you know, filed down or trimmed don't have any issues, but the index finger and the thumb, there have been a few where people do tear through the mesh and we take care of them. But yeah, so that's why the newer versions, and we'll get them out there, you know, somewhat soon. We're doing dual mesh on the thumb and index finger for those guys.
Okay.
And it has the same feel. Yeah. I'm telling you, that's why I handle customer service too, because some of this stuff is just, it's pure entertainment, and I enjoy it in the back and forth with people.
So are you willing to kind of go down a little bit of an avenue of the craziness that comes with customer service and some of
it,
because every once in a while you get a company willing to put it out there. This is what this person said. And, you know, I'm the guy on Instagram is going to say, oh, that guy sounds like he's a lot of fun at parties. You know, that's my typical response. Yeah. And, you know,
I'll hit you with a pretty good one, Dan.
Yes.
So this
yes,
is actually yes, yes. This week I got this one.
Okay.
So I had a lady in Florida who sent me, she said she bought a glove in October of 2021. She said she plays golf 3 to 4 days a week and sent me pictures of the glove and said it's worn out before I expected it to. And so I did calculations at the low side, three days a week from October when she bought it, and it worked out to 48 rounds on the low side. So I'm assuming she was well over that. And I said, ma'am, I sent her a nice email, and I said, we have a 60-day warranty on our gloves, and I'm sorry, but we won't replace this. And I said, based on what you said, this glove made it 48 rounds without deteriorating. She said, she responds immediately back to me. She said, yeah, it was probably more than that, but that's not what I expected. I expected durability to be better. And I just, you know, I didn't respond again, because obviously we weren't going to make this person happy. But, you know, there's 99.9% of people are really cool to deal with, even if they get a glove, and it's very rare with our manufacturing, but I mean, sometimes a stitch is missed, right?
Sure.
Most times people are, you know, they'll just email me, and typically I'll just send out a new glove and send them a free towel or something and say, I'm sorry, this, you know, our manufacturing is really good. This doesn't happen. But every once in a while you'll get somebody that, I mean, who emails you after 48 rounds with a $20 glove and then is upset. We do what we can as best as we can.
Yeah. I should try and do that with my wedges after 48 rounds. Call them and say, right? My wedges they're wearing out. I played 50 rounds though. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So it's wild. It's, we do the best we can. And like I said, most customers are awesome. And that looks like my dog.
Yeah, we got
your dog's hitting me.
The off-course mascot just jumped in the scene.
No,
here.
So it's just crazy, but I do enjoy it because then I know if there is an issue, I know where we can improve, because people email you and say, hey, you know, if you did this, so we'll consider it. Nothing's off the table with us.
Yeah, I don't envy that. I love that you can have humor towards it. You don't seem to be too bitter, which is impressive nowadays. And obviously, the internet is an interesting place. But you're like me. You go to THP when you want to interact with golfers who aren't crazy. So we're crazy. We're just different.
I mean, it is. But you know, you can't take things too personally. You know, and I do feel bad. You know, if somebody gets one of our bags and a driver snaps, I feel bad for them. But, you know, we're making luggage and there's only so much we can do. And the baggage handlers and the airlines have to take some of that heat. So we do the best we can. That's why we came out with the North Pole. Glad you like the name. We just try to do the best we can and take care of people and do it in a timely manner.
I love it. What's the next step? You've got a Sunday bag. Are you going to stand and staff bags, or what are we doing?
I don't know. We used to do some cart bags. We tried a bunch of different things. You know, it's kind of funny the way, you know, bags have gone. Now there's, you know, these $300-$500 bags, which blows me away. Because I remember, you know, most cart bags, you'd be between 100 and 150 unless, you know, there's some mountains. So it's kind of interesting to see how the price points have gotten up and consumers are willing to pay for it. For us, anything new that we develop, we are coming out with another first class bag, but it's just going to be a different color. Just to have another offering. That'll be easy. But the everything new on the horizon for us is really focused on the gloves. We're coming out with a ladies glove. That's a gray. That'll be coming out, I think, next month. And then the max at which we discussed for the guys. So right now we're focused all in on the gloves, because we just seem to be making a dent in sales and taking away a little bit of market share. The thing about it's tricky about the gloves though, is I've had a couple retailers tell me this. One is a local one that we've been doing business with for years. And he basically said, I'm not going to bring in your gloves. And I said, well, I've got a really good relationship. I've known him for 20 years. I said, why not? He said, well, why would I want to bring in something that lasts that long? I want them to burn through it and come back and buy again. And so that's legitimate. So it'll be interesting to see how much of a footprint we get with the gloves outside of the B2C or Amazon. But I don't know. We're definitely full steam ahead with marketing.
Yeah. Good for you. It's cool, man. I love seeing different takes on something that's been sort of beaten to death in a certain way, and a product that without a logo on it, you can go to and buy the Kirkland signatures for X amount of dollars, you know, that there's nothing tricky about it.
Even on THP, I see that, you know, that's one of our biggest competitors. You know, some guys are like, well, I can get just as many with, you know, five rounds or they sell them four or five packs. I don't know. But basically one of their, you know, their four packs, let's say, would, in my opinion, is going to last probably as long as one of our gloves. So are we priced at the middle of the spectrum? Yeah. But if you can get the same wear, and I mean, one thing I also try to tell people is it'll prolong the life of your grips too. I mean, I'm not a guy, I don't change grips very often. I'm probably going to buy a new set before I change my grips. So the silicone we use, especially on rubber grips, I mean, you can have some terrible grips and our glove still sticks to it. So, you know, I think that's a big benefit too that kind of gets lost sometimes, but you know, we're not going to make everybody happy with the gloves, but it's really cool to see that a lot of guys like them and you know, hopefully it helps them improve their game.
Yeah, I love it. I'm excited for you guys. It's been a lot of fun having you on THP interacting with us. And obviously we're appreciative of that, the exposure and some of the perspectives you have when you're more posting for you than anything else, but you know, it's great. We're thrilled for that. Rod, do you have anything for me today? I have a little segment at the end of my show where I let my guest grill me on anything. So,
oh, geez, Dan, this is tough.
Yeah.
What's the biggest changes you've seen in the golf industry since COVID? Besides the delays, besides the manufacturing side, have you seen anything big? I mean, obviously, getting tee times here is ridiculous. I used to be able to get a tee time for a foursome a week in advance. And now, I mean, we're a week and a half, 2 weeks out. And so, you know, and I'm not a very strong planner when it comes to that stuff. So a lot of times I'd like to play and I just don't have an opportunity.
Yeah, I think accessibility to the course is definitely an issue. When COVID first hit, my golf course was stacked for a year. And in fact, there was, I think, 20 plus golfers who got soft capped by gin last year because they just didn't play as much as they did the previous year. So their handicap tanked to the point where they actually, you know, got soft capped, myself included. But my story is a little different and I'm very salty about it. So thanks for making me bring that up. the one thing I've heard, Rod, is the price of the more premium golf courses when you go traveling is getting out of hand, like crazy, because everyone wants to play. And I think courses are recognizing that. It seems to be the trend right now. Everything's going up in price. I think it's going to take me $1,000 now to drive to South Carolina for some golf from Ohio. So
it's nuts. I mean, even the, you know, the tracks here, because, you know, we don't spend $200 around. And that, in this time of year, that's, you know, for a nicer course, that's what you're going to be spending. But even the courses that typically we used to be able to pay $60, which are decent tracks, well maintained. I mean, those are $120, $110. Everywhere. So it's crazy. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Even the high-end courses, I'm sure they've gotten out of hand too, but even the low to moderate courses, it's pretty crazy in Arizona, that's for sure.
Well, people save their money buying your gloves. They can afford all these fancy courses. So
That's right. I love it.
Hey man, thank you so much. It was a really fun chat today. I'd love to have you on again soon when a couple new products come out. We can talk about them. And for sure. Enjoy the, as I get into like the part of the year I don't hate my life, which I call spring and summer. You're heading into what would you call the grill factory of summer. So
but you know that. What? I'm actually looking forward to the 110s because then our snowboards go away. And then I can actually go out and play some golf. So, okay. You know, I could actually call up a course and get out a few days in advance.
Yeah. With your caddy daddy cooler bags, right? Yeah.
Well, for water, Dan.
For water. Yeah. All right, Rod, thank you so much. Everyone out there, hope you had a chance to check out Caddy Daddy. Just looking at the products on hand here, their travel bags look absolutely spectacular. Probably going to cost me some money here soon if I ever start traveling again. So, and check out their new gloves. They're definitely a different take on the glove industry and definitely worth taking a look at. If you are golfing this weekend, have a great time, make it count, and let me know how you play.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.